This episode of Comics Coast to Coast is brought to you by patrons like you. If you'd like to help out with the show, head on over to patreon.com/comicsc2c and give us a little bit of your love, your sweet, sweet lovin'. Did I just make this weird?
This is Comics Coast to Coast.
Everybody, this is Brian Dunaway, and you're listening to Comics Coast to Coast, episode 265, the Brad Geiger interview. Can't wait to talk to Brad, but first, I must talk to Joel Duggan. Joel?
I'm not going to talk very long because we need to talk to Brad, so there's that.
Nice. Wow.
But hi.
So usually we get a long story before the show that makes our guest wait, but you're just trying to rush through that and press. Okay, fine. All right. So.
We'll Deadpool, talk to fourth wall. Just
right,
go.
Right, just go. Okay, we're going to talk to Matthew Sharma. No, we're not, because he's having some kind of procedure that he won't tell us, but apparently it's not too dangerous. Is that what I'm hearing? Is that what the email said?
I don't know. The email said something about removing fingernails. I'm not going to go there.
All right. So he's out this week, but apparently he said, don't worry, guys, is something very simple. So if you want to have some thoughts and you want to make them good and you want to send them towards Matt's way, do that. Matthew Ducharme at Matt_TheWad. There's an underscore.
There's another underscore.
There's a couple underscores in there. Twitter. I don't know why Matt does underscore thing.
Matt anyway. _the_wad.
There you go. Hey. Joel.
Yes.
Do you know what? We got a great guest.
Geiger on the show.
We got a great guest tonight, and he's
I was already there.
Right. He's part of a almost like a card collection of awesome artists that we've been wanting to get on the show. And this may complete the set with a little caveat, with a little asterisk next to it about Scott Kurtz. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But hey, Brad, how are you?
Hey, thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
We're super stoked to have you on the show. For those who don't know what you do, can you give us just a little quick rundown of who Brad Geiger is?
Who is Brad Geiger? Who's the man behind
the
mask?
The man.
Well, I started doing a web comics in February of 2000. So I am right now celebrating 16 years of comics, most of which were daily up until just this year. Started out with Greystone Inn, which you can still see at greystoneinn.net, which was 6 days a week. Wow. That transformed into Evil Inc. And that was 6 days a week for quite a while. And then that throttled back to 5 days when I finally figured out nobody was reading on Saturdays. and Evil Inc. has, as of this year, has stopped being a comic strip. And I've kind of rebooted the storyline, and I'm producing that now as a graphic novel that I update in 2 updates a week, 2 partial page updates. So I'm writing it and creating it as a graphic novel. And then twice a week, I'll put a partial page up and share it with my audience that way until finally the novel is done. And I'm really super excited about that.
I told you, Joel, I told you last week. I said, you know what, man, this whole web comic everyday crap, that's going out, man. Making bigger content is where it's at right now, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that we've seen with a lot of the guests that we've had on the show. More people are doing long form things that they can turn into graphic novels.
Right.
It was one of the few good things that came out of the ad blocker situation that finally crested last year. Mm-hmm. And that was, I started looking at my ad revenue, and for a while it was always very important to have something new up on the site to keep generating that traffic. And it was also important to build readership habits. I was a big believer in that. And this was a guy, you're talking to a guy that's been around long enough to remember before there was RSS and stuff like that. And so getting people into the habit, now most people don't even use a bookmark anymore on a regular basis. And they're kind of getting a steady stream of content through Facebook and other social media. I took a look at all that and I'm like, why am I doing a daily update anymore? I can do this a lot better. I can write better. I can make a better product if I step back from the daily strip and create this more as a graphic novel. And so far, I got to tell you, I'm really thrilled with the results.
We've been going through your archive, and I got to say, it is exciting. It seems like there's less throwaway now in what you're doing.
Mike and Jerry from Penny Arcade always used to say, and it always used to grind me when they would say it, but they would say, well, we give our fans hamburgers every day, or we can give them steak three times a week.
Right.
And it always used to really set my teeth on edge, but there's a little bit of truth to that, in that I'm not only am I not trying to do like a joke every four panels or at the end of every strip, but I can let that writing breathe a little bit. I can take, I can let it develop. It's a lot more natural cadence. And although I try to get as much funny in as possible, it's not quite so forced as the comic strip was.
Right. You know, I think it just, as consumers, I think everything has changed the way we're consuming things. I mean, we're in a time when you binge watch everything. You don't watch TV on the weekly anymore. You just sit down, you binge watch it. We're changing our habits entirely right now, and across all mediums. It's
a time. Yeah, and that's going to create an entirely new set of problems for us as creators to solve. In other words, when people binge, the danger there is they find a new favorite after they binge on your product, and you've got to remind them 2 months, 6 months, however many months down the road, that, hey, you're still here. And that's where social media, I think, still becomes your best tool in audience retention, is keeping them interested in the other things that you're talking about and doing and offering through social media. Because otherwise, people can forget you real easy.
Oh, totally. Totally. Now,
With the, you know, kind of the switch from Evil Inc. going from strip to like the graphic novel format, the longer form, did you find artistically that it was also kind of like letting yourself out of the cage? Like all of a sudden you get to draw all these things that you couldn't fit in, you know, a little 16x4 rectangle?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that I loved about doing Fables when I did that for the Daily News, they were a tabloid sized newspaper, and they would give me a full page and I would do stories in comic format about life in the city of Philadelphia. And the thing I loved about doing that was the page design aspect, that I could really play with leading the reader across that landscape in using different types of panels and stuff like that to really add to the experience. And I haven't been able to do that since. And, I told myself, Scott, and by the way, this whole idea of doing the comic as a graphic novel and uploading it to the web in partial pages, I totally cribbed that from Scott Kurtz when he started Table Titans. That was the whole plan for Table Titans. And I told myself it was going to be a half page. And very, very quickly, I saw that, you know, that's just not going to be the case, because I'm very conscientious about every update has to have a meaning, because somebody new is coming to your site every day and they're making the decision on whether they're going to stay with you that day, which is something I talk about on webcomics.com all the time. You always have to be retaining readers. And so very quickly it became half page. Sometimes it's a quarter page on Tuesday and three quarters of a page on Thursday. One week it was literally two panels and then the rest of the page on Thursday, because that's just where the story breaks. That's where the important parts were. But aside from that, that ability to lay out a page and to really put everything into that layout, it's a great challenge. It's a lot of fun. Plus, when it comes time to do the book, see, right now in the old Evil Inc., I took those comic strips and I laid them out as a graphic novel. And then I would add some panels that I would draw to smooth out the storytelling. And I would offer the Evil Inc. comic strip as a graphic novel when I did the print editions. It's a lot of freaking work. I am so looking forward to getting to the last page of this comic and compiling them into an InDesign document, hitting print and leaving.
Yeah. I mean, you're essentially kind of doing now what a lot of web comic strip artists do, is that they just compile everything.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Right.
Yeah, but with a graphic novel, it's just such an interesting bend. With the thing that we mentioned earlier about binge consumption with folks online, did you give any thought to drawing like the comic ahead of time and having the book ready and then releasing it page by page on the internet for those that wanted to consume it that way? Or, hey, if you want it all, just buy the book right now.
Well, yeah, I thought about it for about a minute. The problem is that that would have put in maybe a 6-month lag where I was working on the comic and having nothing really to put up on the web. And since this is my full-time job now, that just wasn't an option. I've got to be continually posting stuff on the web. I've got to be continuously working. And I don't have the luxury of disappearing under the radar for 6 months and then surfacing with this new product.
Right. Absolutely. Not to jump too much, but you had mentioned webcomics.com, which is just, if you've ever been to webcomics.com and you're a cartoonist or someone who is aspiring to be, you know, any type of web cartoonist, oh my God, where have you been? I mean, it's webcomics.com.
I'm super proud of webcomics.com. I started that in 2009 and made it a subscription site the next year in 2010. And back then it was really, To take a website and put it behind a paywall was really super threatening to a lot of people. There was a lot of people that were super angry about it. And really, it's absolutely in many ways no different than Patreon,
right?
You know, which is very much a subscriber service. So I took Patreon, I took webcomics.com behind a paywall, but then I made it a point 5 times a week to always update something for the independent cartoonist working on the web, whether it's a tutorial, advice. I try not to go too much on news because I kind of figure you can get news anywhere, but really useful information that you need to run the business of doing a webcomic and run the craft of doing a webcomic. And as people have gotten more and more comfortable with doing money transactions on the web, that site has just gotten bigger and better, and really it's a tremendous resource. If you become a member, you've got access to a reference that goes all the way back to 2009, 2008. There's stuff back there, and much of it is still as useful today as it was then. Some of this stuff just never goes away. And then the stuff that's new, we're always updating on.
Right. And only right now, I haven't been like in a little while, but I mean, you can try the site for $5 right now.
Yeah, $5. You get 30 days of site with no strings attached. They don't, you know, you don't get a pinged. You don't have to go through the trouble of canceling and all that kind of stuff. You just get 30 days, and then you never get charged again. You lose site access after 30 days, and if you want to subscribe, or if you want to just go for another 30 days, you can do that too. But it's all up to you. There's no strings attached.
So you're telling me at the end of my trial, you're not going to call me, Brad Geiger, going to call me on the phone and go, hey man,
No, I've done that once. Just I sent out like a group email saying, "Hey, I know that you signed up for a trial, and if you're interested, here's how you do it." But even that, and I think I've been doing this trial thing for 2 years now. That's an email I've sent out once. I don't even do a whole lot of that because I figure, you know what? I had my chance. If you became a trial member, I had my chance to keep you. That's kind of my attitude from doing comics for so long. It's like if I didn't do my job and make you realize what a good resource that is, then you know,
right?
It's a happy parting.
It's only like $3 a year, right? I mean,
it comes down
to less than $3 a month. For the amount of reference and the just the sheer ability to talk with other serious professionally minded, not professional, because not everybody's professional, and you don't have to be in webcomics.com to be considered a professional. There was all kinds of upsetness about that, but you talk to your peers and in such a way where you don't have to worry about like one of your readers stumbling by and say, "Oh, looks like Joel's talking about, you know, doing NSFW at some point. I don't know how I feel about that." It's private. We have very few issues with people taking the conversations outside of the site, and you can talk about things in a very unguarded way that you can't do on a lot of other sites. Right. So it's
a safe environment.
Yeah. And I'm always moderating it. And there's other people that are kind of keeping an eye on things so that, and this drives me crazy. I see this on Facebook constantly, where you have somebody coming in giving absolutely horrible advice and giving it as if they are the absolute authority on it. I've seen this happen so many times, and there is very little of that because I'm always moderating. So if somebody comes in and says something that is patently untrue, I can guide the conversation back into a manageable situation. I can say, okay, you know, let's talk about what things like copyright and fair use and things like that. Let's talk about what those words actually mean. And then I've got a ton of people that cover the stuff that I don't know as much about, the tech stuff. Phil Hofer's in there constantly helping out with Comics Easel and Comics Press stuff. It's stuff that's way over my head. So I can't be proud enough about that site. It's a lot of good stuff for people that are trying to do what we do.
And super easy because while we were talking, I signed up.
good. I'm welcome.
I have to confess that I was at one point a member. I'm not currently, but I certainly did partake at the early stages. Cause I remember, and it's funny cause I'll confess this now, I was following the site when it was not a paywall. Mm-hmm. And then I was one of those guys who silently, I didn't mention it online, but I was very silently kind of ruffled when it went behind a paywall. And I was like, God damn it.
That was us at the time though, man.
We're talking 6 years ago or more. I mean, $30 a year that's what I paid for a membership on DeviantArt to just remove the ads. Like that's just
absolutely
nothing. There's definitely a value that people will put on things these days. And I think that's one of the other things that we're seeing a change is, you know, people look at the content and look at the value of it and they'll just decide, you know, is it worth $250 a month? Yes. You know, for example, in DeviantArt, maybe people just use ad blockers because they don't think it's really worth it. They don't want to support the site because that's maybe not where they live, you know, like whereas somebody that's eating, sleeping and breathing webcomics, you know, this is where they live. And speaking of, two of the resources that you have available on the site are the Webcomics Handbook and its predecessor, How to Make Webcomics. And I had mentioned briefly before we recorded that How to Make Webcomics is how I got started. I had done a lot of research. I had a comic strip in the newspaper when I was in university, like in my school paper, but How to Make Webcomics was really how the hell do I do this? How do I make this jump? And that was the instruction manual that got me through. I realize that the Webcomics Handbook is kind of like the extension thereof. Do you think that How to Make Webcomics is something that people, is it still relatable these days or has so much changed with webcomics that some of the content is going to be out of date?
When we did How to Make Webcomics, Facebook hadn't even happened yet.
Oh God.
Wow.
Were we still MySpacing it back then?
Yeah. I mean, this there's not information about Facebook or Twitter on the webcomics.com. It's a great resource. I still go back to it because there's a lot of stuff in there that's super useful and evergreen. But the whole reason I did the webcomics handbook. Oh, and if you're a member, you get a discount. So make sure you get your discount on that if you're going to get it. But nice. For the webcomics handbook, so much had happened, and the webcomics handbook is largely based on the stuff I wrote for webcomics.com. So it was a way to use that information to get it into an easy, ready reference that was easier than, you know, searching things on the site and catalog it and make it all easily grouped. But where How to Make Webcomics was a 200-page book. This is a 300-page book. What I tell people all the time is everything that we covered in How to Make Webcomics, if it gets covered again in Webcomics Handbook, you can be assured that we're going to drill deeper on the subject. And then the entire book goes much broader because it talks about a whole ton of stuff that just wasn't around back there. It's mostly social media, but also things like setting up your website, those kinds of issues, selling things online, merchandising. And you will find and I wrote, obviously, I wrote all of the chapters in Webcomics Handbook, but I wrote the chapter on comic conventions for the How to Make Webcomics book. And if you remember, there was an illustration of me standing on top of my convention table like a carnival barker and very very overjoyed. And the comic convention chapter in the Webcomics Handbook is a very different chapter because I've completely changed my attitude. I'm still very pro comic convention, but it's where the other one was raw exuberance. This one is much more pragmatic and says you really should not be going to a comic convention until you have a warehouse or a storage space full of merchandise that you're needing to move. If you're going to a comic convention and then you stroke your chin and say, okay, now what do I need to make to sell at this comic convention? You are doing a horrible thing for your finances.
Right, you're doing it backwards, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been at this for 6+ years now, and I still only go to conventions that I can drive to.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't get in a plane for anything.
I don't do a convention unless I know that come hell or high water, I'm going to make some kind of a profit. Otherwise, I just don't go, especially between Kickstarter and Patreon. I know that I can, if I just do a couple extra pieces over the weekend, I can drive my Patreon higher,
right?
By the people that are going to be drawn to that. And I can feed those Patreon supporters that are right now forming the lion's share of my business, and keeping those people happy is job number one above all else. For the first time for the last 6 months, the Evil Ink comic strip is not the top priority. Patreon and doing stuff that is exclusively for Patreon is my number one priority. And that's a huge shift for me.
And that's your audience, man. I mean, that's the ones that put up, right?
Yeah, that was amazing for me because as I know you guys already know, but I don't know if the listeners do. A big part of what I'm doing on Patreon is not safe for work comics, right? Yes. Adult comics, and what happened was I put it. I saw, you know, some people were doing this, and I put it on my site, and I said, hey, what would you guys think if I did a $10 level and did one comic strip a month? I think at that point, one a month that was not safe for work, and my Patreon that had been flatlined at a certain number for over 7 months, doubled by the end of the month.
Nice.
And it just went, and that comic strip became a weekly, and that weekly became a full page. And the more I upped the ante, the more my readers were like, yeah, this is great. And it really right now is it's the ball game right now. It's in a really, weird sense, a lot of the reason for me to continue to do Evil Inc. is to continue to drive people into the Patreon.
That's right. That's great. Now, John, John Wigger, who we talked to a couple of weeks ago, was, I think, that started our whole conversation again about having getting Brad on the show. And that was an amazing eye-opening experience with that. And you're just confirming what we just heard a few weeks ago. And also, by the way, John has been working really hard on getting that patron blocking thing going. Mm-hmm. And you just talked about that on webcomics.com, which is, I just subscribed and I'm reading it. So,
well, John, I owe John a huge debt of gratitude because he was one of the Patreon campaigns that I looked at that was doing really well. Right. And I've seen John at 110 different comic conventions. And he back when he knew I was trying to switch to Manga Studio, he came up to me several times, handed me his card and said, if you're having trouble, just call me. I'll talk you through it, you know. And of course, I never did. And I'm looking at the, and I had his card. Hell, I had two or three copies of his card at different places. You know, he's that kind of guy. He will repeatedly say, if you need help, I'm there for you. And I picked up the phone and I said, John, tell me what you're doing on this not safe for work stuff. What are you doing? How are you doing it? Walk me through this. And he spent the next hour on the phone with me. And at the end, we're kind of chatting. And he says, I can't get over the fact I'm talking to the guy that's written two books on webcomics. And I just told him all this stuff. And I said, you know, that's the problem with having done stuff like that is that I always kind of feel a little bit self-conscious about asking a question because I figure everybody just assumes I know all the answers. But the reason I'm able to do the books and the site is that I don't know a lot and I go out and find out and I research and I'm, you know, I have luckily have people like John that I can pick up the phone and call and get some advice. So the next month I launched the Not Safe for Work level and it was a way for these readers who have been with me in many cases for 16 years. It was a way for them to say, this is what we've always wanted. Right. The newspaper strip has been nice, but it's not. And I always walked right up to the line on the newspaper strip. And in fact, a lot of times crossing the line, according to a couple editors over there, right. who I just got off the phone with a couple nights ago. But it's always been double entendre. It's always been walking a very safe line. And this was a way for them to say, nope, you were giving us NBC primetime. What we were hoping for was HBO late night.
Right. And you know what? It feels weird. I think if you offered the Not Safe for Work stuff for free, I think there's something in the psyche of the American reader, especially, who would just go, this feels weird. But when you put it behind a paywall, it seems like higher quality work or something. I don't know. Is this in the mind of the psyche possibly? Is that?
Yeah. Oh, no, there's a lot of truth to that. There's a lot of truth that sometimes if you can very easily devalue your own work. Right. People assume that by making it for free, people are going to want it more. And the fact of the matter is that in many cases, what we see is that when you offer someone something for free, they immediately assume that it's worthless.
Right. True story.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I've struggled with webcomics for a long time is that kind of I came to the game late, so I wasn't trying to figure it out with everybody. I mean, the book was already out, so I mean, I kind of knew where to go. But then you're like, wait a minute. So I'm giving this thing away for free. I mean, all of a sudden I feel hamstringed. Like, well what do I do now?
I always have a problem with that because the fact of the matter is, up until very recently, webcomics were never free, right? There was always an ad-based transaction that was happening there. So whereas it certainly didn't cost anything for the reader to go to your site, it was never free. And that's something that gets lost in this conversation until... Like I said, I started 2015 and I looked at my ad revenue and it was half of what it had been the same month in 2014, January. And it never rebounded. I was at half of what I made last year or the previous year, all throughout 2015. And it just got worse and worse. And the main reason was ad blockers. You know, that my ad revenue had gone way down. So the bad news is, webcomics are changing drastically. The good news is that this is where the creative people really kick in. And, you know, this is where you get creative about your business. You start reimagining what you're doing, rethinking what you're doing. And in my case, it's opened up a whole lot of doors because I didn't allow myself to get pigeonholed into banging my head against the wall, doing the same old thing over and over again. I rethought things that I've been doing for 16 years and it's working out great.
Yeah. I mean, and that takes guts, man.
Well, guts and the fact that, you know, I had already staked my claim here. You know, I had gone full time in 2012 when my job made it clear that I was facing an imminent layoff. So it was a question of take the layoff and a buyout or take the risk of not losing your job. And then if they do cut you, all you've got is unemployment. And I had a long talk with my wife and we said, okay, we've been working on, you know, this comic strip has been something that I've been developing for 12 years at that point. It's now or never. I'm never going to have a better chance to get a running start on this. And so it was not luxury at all when I was in 2015 looking around at where money was coming in. It was, I have to make this work or else. I mean, it was the words of Phil Folio, another person I turned to for a lot of advice when I was starting to go down the adult comics route because of his work with Xenophile. His words were ringing in my ears because he said, I don't ever have a backup plan, because if I have a backup plan, eventually I'm going to use it.
Right.
And he goes, I don't have a safety net. There will be times when it's hard to pay your bills. And that certainly has been the case at different times. But he says, you've got to be 100% invested in this. And if you've always got a fallback or always got a safety net, it's not going to be the same. And, you know, I was looking at this thing and I was like, I've got to do something different. I've got to make something happen because, you know, mortgage is due next month.
Right.
Yeah. Was the shift into NSFW comics a natural one for you? Was that something that you were gravitating towards anyway, and then you were looking to other artists to confirm?
No, in fact, we did an episode of Surviving Creativity. Scott Kurtz and I do a podcast called Surviving Creativity, and we had Erica Moen on. So it was the three of us and the other Surviving Creativity host that I don't want to sound like I just glossed over, who is Corey Cassoni, an integral part of the group. He's Scott's business manager. And a really smart guy. And we talked about it on the show. And I said there that, you know, I was raised very Catholic. I've since very much kind of separated personally from that. But I was raised very Catholic. And this whole idea of doing this really... it made me uncomfortable.
Right.
And I had to really kind of think about why I was doing it and how I was doing it and the message I was sending and all that kind of stuff. And on the other hand, at the same time, I was kind of going through all of that. The irony was that this was some of my best writing because I wasn't happy with just doing penis vagina.
Right.
Or vagina, vagina, or penis, penis for that case. I wasn't happy with just doing that. If it was going to be something I was going to do, it was going to be something that was creative and maybe pushed a little bit outside of my comfort zone. And I wanted it to be good. And I think it has been. And it just in terms of drawing, you have to really be up on your anatomy to do this stuff. And I don't just mean just drawing the parts. Anybody can draw one figure standing doing something. Right. Anybody can draw two figures standing together and talking. When you draw two figures that are touching, doing anything, dancing, doing a juggling. Anytime those bodies come into contact and your proportions have to be dead on in both cases, or else things aren't going to line up right. You've got to bring your A game to drawing that. And so it's been a much bigger challenge, which I've really relished. And also it's been good. It's good to do stuff that doesn't make you perfectly comfortable from time to time. You know, you learn a lot about yourself that way. And in that regard, it's been fantastic. Plus, my backers on Patreon are the best. Even when I sometimes maybe go too far or have a misstep, it's never anger. It's never you're a putz. It's always super supportive. I have yet to get an angry email from one of my Patreon backers. I've gotten a couple. Have you considered ... and super polite stuff like that. But those men and I was going to say those guys, but it's men and women. Those men and women are super supportive of right. what I'm doing. And it makes me want to do that much better.
And just because it's not safe for work doesn't mean it's just a bunch of booby drawings or something. I mean, I think Eddie Murphy said it best in Raw when he said, I can't come out and have no curse show. I mean, I got to throw in a few jokes in between the curse. I can't come out and go, hello, filth farm. I mean,
yeah.
And so yeah, it still has to be creative and entertaining, right?
I'm doing Evil Inc. I call Evil Inc. After Dark. And there are these short vignette style stories. Some of them are a couple pages. Some of them are five pages. And I'm doing it. It's obviously a once a week thing. I'll post a page a week. But I'm alternating between a storyline that has been going since the very start. I think it's up to 13 pages now. And then I alternate between that storyline and then a shorter storyline that maybe goes three pages and comes to an end, or five pages, so on and so forth. The 13 page plus story centers on an outer space pirate character that I created, and she's in charge of this motley crew of pirates, and they go out and get into all kinds of trouble. And I've been writing it for about 10 pages, and all of a sudden I started looking at what I was doing, and it's like, oh geez, I can have this happen, and this person can come in here, and all of a sudden I realized that I had this great plot laid right out in front of me, and here all I was trying to do was porn.
Nice.
And it was nice. Like, I thought I was doing this other thing, and now, you know, here, and so it's become, hopefully, the best of both, you know, time will tell, obviously, but man, it's been a real eye opener for me. It's been a lot of fun to do that.
With the NSFW stuff behind the paywall at Patreon, I mean, you've got that great separation of the people that are reading it have signed up for it. Like, they know what they're getting. You're not getting those angry emails from people like, oh, I stumbled upon your website and it offended me, rah, you know. But I'm wondering, from a character point of view, do you have any concerns about someone that has read Evil Inc. outside of the NSFW world deciding, hey, I want to support Brad and I'm going to go and check out these NSFW comics, and have that then color their opinion of what they've experienced on Evil Inc.?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that was one of the side benefits of my rebooting the storyline at the beginning of the year. Mm. And that is that what I basically told my readers was that old Evil Inc. comic strips universe still exists, but it's over in its own dimension now.
Right.
And
totally DC'd that thing up, didn't you?
in a way. And I said, okay, now we're on this new place, and all of the relationships start from square one. So Cap and Miss Match are not married. You know, Desdemona and Iron Dragon do not have a relationship. Everyone starts from square one. And that was one of the side benefits, was that I didn't have to worry about someone saying, oh, look, you know, Captain America, or I'm sorry, Cat, Captain Heroic. See if you can take care of that in post.
Right. replacement with Superman.
Yeah.
Heroic, you know, is over here doing this thing with Amazing Amazon, and you know, he's supposed to be married, and that brings in a whole morality issue. So it very conveniently took care of that. Plus, looking back over, you know, I started Evil Inc. in 2005, and I'm a much better writer now than I am than I was in 2005. I mean, the first book of Webcomics Handbook, the first page is it's hard to get worse at something you do every day, and my career is living proof of that. Well, I'm a better writer now than I was. I can say that with a little bit of confidence.
Right.
And I made a lot of mistakes when I launched Evil Inc. And one of them was I started right in the middle of Captain Heroic and Miss Match in their marriage. They were already married. And I threw away so many opportunities to develop the relationship and to bring you along on that, that I decided when I rebooted, I was not going to make that same mistake twice. I'm going to bring them in where they're both fresh and maybe having feelings for each other. But, then that allows me to bring in a third person, a love triangle, all of those great stories that we see in comics. Across the spectrum, and allows me to do a lot more with those characters than I could in 2005 when I said, boom, they're married and that's the gimmick and we'll go from there.
While we're still talking about Evil Inc. and the arc that we've seen as far as, you know, your time put in the comic, how are you drawing Evil Inc. these days?
Oh, well, although I never did take John Wigger up on his offer to help me with Manga Studio, what finally happened, I got to a point a couple years ago where I was really getting upset with the quality of Bristol Board I was getting. I would buy it and I would open the package and some of it would be good and the next pad would be bad, and some of, you know, or even within the same pad, some of the pages would be waxy and some of them wouldn't, and it was making me crazy. Right. So when I went full time in 2012, I had no sooner put in my last day when I got onto a plane and went out to Emerald City Comic Con to make an appearance out there. And of course, Scott Kurtz lives out there, and he was nice enough to put me up for the weekend. And I was staying with him. And when I arrived at his studio, he said, I've got a happy going full time cartoonist present for you. And he had this Wacom Cintiq that he was using for travel. It was a travel model. I think it's a 12WX. I forget what all the numbers are. But he said, I'm not going to use this thing anymore. And I'd love to see you working digitally.
That's awesome.
Here it is. Enjoy it. And yeah, I was overwhelmed. And I promptly brought it home and it sat on my desk for the next year because I was scared to death of
not touching anything.
It sat there, sat right next to my workspace, but I would not touch it. Every now and again, I'd fire it up just to see if I could make it, you know, make an image appear. Oh man, it really scared me. So finally, I got to the point where I was like, you know, this Bristol Board is shit. And I don't know whether I can swear on this show, but I
say shit. You can tell.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I said, this is horrible. And I've done this consistently throughout comics. I just decided on Friday that starting Monday, it was going to be digital and I wasn't going to go back. I wasn't going to allow myself to go back. So that between Friday and Monday, I spent a pretty tough week learning to do it in Photoshop. But listen, I've been doing Photoshop since 1991. I knew Photoshop inside and out. It was just a question of making the stylus work on the Wacom. And I got the hang of that pretty quickly. And I started doing comics digitally using Photoshop. And that was good, but I kept seeing these people talking about this manga studio. And Lar D'Souza, who's obviously the artist for Looking for Group and Least I Could Do, he was talking about, he was on Twitter and Dave Kellett at the same time was thinking about manga studio. He says, guys, let me get you on a Google Hangouts. I'll have you started on Manga Studio and give you a head start. You'll be doing it by the end of our get together. And so he got us on a Google Hangout. And when I saw the things that Manga Studio could do, and this was after maybe a year of doing Photoshop, when I saw the stuff that Manga Studio could do, I was like, it was another Friday to Monday transition. I'm like, Friday is going to be the last time I open up Photoshop. And then I am starting Manga Studio. And that weekend was hell.
Oh, yeah.
That weekend, I was ready to slit my freak wrists. And I mean going up, not this, you know, this hiker. I was going to go right up
the touching, getting crap here. No.
That's right, baby. I was going to do it, and I was going to do it right. And it was 48 hours of Dante's third circle. And then almost like switching a light on, all of a sudden it started making sense. And I wrote in webcomics.com that I was never going to go to Manga Studio because it was nothing like Photoshop. And once I learned Manga Studio, I know that I'll never, ever go back. Do you know why? Because it's nothing like Photoshop.
Ah.
It is so, the perspective rulers alone should have you locked in. And I'll put in a good word for them because they're good people. If you're a Photoshop user and you go to Manga Studio and you don't like it because you don't get text boxes, I'm going to tell you right now, those text boxes are making ugly word balloons because you're trying to put a text that you made inside of a rectangle into an oval word balloon. You're literally trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. Use that Manga Studio text tool the way it's built to force returns and shape that text inside of the balloon, right. You'll be doing better work overnight. You'll have a hard weekend. Call me. I'll talk you through it. I'll make the same promise that Lar made to me. And if not, I'll at least remind you which way to point the razor blade. But if you can make it through the weekend, you'll never go back. I guarantee you'll never go back. It's vastly superior software.
I love it, man. I'll tell you, I've been kind of soft pedaling around here for these guys going, you guys really need to do the Manga Studio and get off the Photoshop. But they always knock me down and go, no, Photoshop's the way to go. And I got this brush and that brush. And you know what? I'm going to let Joel argue it because he's fitting to tell you how good Photoshop is. I ain't got to say nothing. Go ahead, Joel.
Yeah, because I draw my comic on paper, buddy. No, I use Photoshop. Ironically, I use Photoshop for the balloons of all things.
Oh, yeah.
But like I touch things up in Photoshop. I don't draw my comic in Photoshop. Right. But no, I find that.
I totally get that. Get that.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it too is I think the idea of going forward and not going back is a great, kind of a great mantra to do anything in art, because for me, it's always the time thing. It's like, yeah, I could sit down this weekend and learn a new software if I had time, which I don't. So I know that I can get things done in Photoshop in, you know, an hour. So it's that hour or it's the five it's going to take me to not enjoy and pull my teeth out, you know?
But one thing I will say, I think my art's taken a huge leap forward since I went digitally in general. And this was true in Photoshop. Manga Studio, I think, has given me a more granular level of control over it. But just my ability to draw in proportion correctly, my ability to fix figures on the fly. When I was working in pen and ink and penciling in blue pencil, you know, you'd get somebody and you could tell that their head was too big, right?
Right.
For their body. Yep. And then you try to redraw it. You'd erase that blue pencil and then you'd try to redraw it, but you'd end up tracing over that faded erased image.
Right.
You know, it's like you couldn't break literally out of that mold. Whereas now I lasso that head, shrink it down, and it's the perfect size and I move on. And it took me a fraction of a second. Doing stuff like that, it will make your art leap leap light years ahead because you're not sitting there erasing and trying to get it right this time. I'll take an eyeball and move it up if it's too far down. I'll take a head that I that's kind of slanted and I'll unslant it and bring it into true. I can do all kinds of stuff that it's stuff that you notice as you're drawing, and I don't have to stop and erase and redraw. I just lasso it and nudge it to where it needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, I do all of my client work on a Cintiq. I've got a 24 HD, I think. Mm-hmm. And for all of those reasons, it saves me so much time when you're trying to get a likeness, like you're drawing a cartoon of like a husband and wife and you know, his eyes are too close together. So you nudge them apart, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No.
No, all I was going to add was that it's perfect for that.
Yeah. Skype battle now. Right. One of the things I wanted to ask you, because I know it's true of me, because I still draw the strip on paper. When you go and you've got a sketchbook or you're just drawing for fun, do you find that your skills have improved having spent so much time digitally, just kind of fearlessly attacking stuff? So that when you go back to paper, you're just like, oh, I know how to do this. This is just
a great confidence builder. Plus, anytime that you do when you're doing something like that, the novelty of drawing on paper again, and maybe novelty is not the right word. Nostalgia might be even better. You appreciate the experience more than you did before, and it's like, oh yeah, this is because there's some wonderful tactile experiences to be found in drawing on a nice sheet of Bristol, with a good pencil or with some nice ink. There's something that's tactile about that is nice to go back and experience again.
Until you realize you can't do undo, and then it's like
that, and then you look at that paper and you say, nice place to visit, but I don't want to live here.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love how Joel asked you when you draw for fun. Does that happen?
No. I'm trying to get to that point. I'm trying to get to the point where I draw for fun and where I read more, because all of my heroes do those things. They do a lot of drawing for fun, and the most creative people that I meet are voracious readers, and those are two of my failures. I need to make time to do that more. But no, the honest answer is I do very little drawing for fun. It's sitting down and cranking that stuff out.
Too much pressure to get to draw for fun. Actually, I drew in the tub last night for fun. It was very frustrating. Yeah, I did. I was like, you know what? It was nothing to read in there. I'm in the tub. I'm like, I got a piece of paper over here. And I was actually some really good times. I was like, there's no pressure. Nobody's expecting anything from me. I'm just going to doodle on this piece of paper. Got everything wet. It was a disaster, total mess, but I had fun.
That's the important thing, though, is that you had fun. I think we get wrapped up in coming up with an image that we can go running over to Twitter with or post up.
Yes.
Sometimes it's nice to do a couple things that are just for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the hard part too about social media. I mean, everybody is posting like what they think is worth posting. So what you're not seeing are the 12 horrible drawings that they had to get through before they had that perfect pose or the one that they felt had the right kind of energy, you know? When people go to the like life drawing classes and they post like three or four sketches, there's 40 sketches from that life drawing class. They're not showing you those for a reason, but yet we're just so used to seeing everybody's like highlight reel that it puts a lot of pressure on you, you know?
I forget who said that first, but you and I were thinking about the exact same phrase, and that is, you know, the danger of social media is that you're comparing your behind the scenes with everyone else's highlight reel. And you gotta, social media, I'm a big fan of. I like social media. But I never kid myself about what it's there for, what I'm using it for, and what it's intended to be. And it's really easy to, I see people get sucked into it all the time. It's really easy to get kind of enveloped by social media. My best advice to people who are doing this, is to remember what it's there for, what you're doing there, use it for what it is, and then get the heck away from it.
Yeah. We too often use it for a popularity contest or some kind of invisible
space
points that we think that we're
garnering.
Yeah.
Believe me, I saw that. I I saw that you were knocking on the door of 10,000 followers on Twitter, and I freaking just about bit through my tongue.
What?
Congratulations. That's fantastic. But I was jealous as hell.
Right. And what does it really awesome. Mean? Nothing.
It means nothing. It means you nothing. Were better than me long before that 10K.
She's right. I'm like, just come on, man. Just give me it. If I could just turn just a little bit of that into something that was real value, you know, it's ridiculous. Also, not to mention, I went and looked at some statistics on how much were real and how many were fake. And about 20% of those, 25% of those are nothing. There's like spam. So yeah. You know, there's 2,000 or more spam bots just following me. So I'm like, screw you, spam bots. And it's crazy.
We all do that for the first couple hundred, right? You get your Twitter account and like, oh, someone followed me. Oh, no, that's a spam bot. Delete. Yeah. I don't need you, fake follower. And then after you hit like, you know, around 600 or 700, you're like, screw this noise. I don't have time to sort this out. I'll let the world sort it out. And I think, Brad, to just go back to something we were talking about, I'm 99% sure that it was Corey Cassoni that said that, the highlight reel. Yeah. I'm a fan of Surviving Creativity. So I'm pretty sure that's where I totally stole that from.
It very well may be. That guy is super smart. When he talks, my ears perk up because he's on point more often than not.
Surviving Creativity. We've kind of mentioned it a couple of times, but we really haven't pointed anybody anywhere to go listen to it, but you really should. Cause this shows if Matt was here, this would be the part of the show where he'd remind us that we only have like 5 minutes left. So after listening to this episode and the other 264 episodes of Comics Coast to Coast, you might want to run over and listen to Surviving Creativity. Where can people listen to that at?
You can get it at patreon.com/survivingcreativity, or I know we're putting them up on SoundCloud. So if you go over to SoundCloud and do a search for Surviving Creativity, you'll get all the stuff there. And it's really it was built out of a yearning to kind of recapture a little bit of that Webcomics Weekly essence, knowing that getting all four of us together was just going to be impossible. And so Scott and I and Corey got together and said, what if we do something similar, but we really focused in not just on webcomics, but we expanded it to other types of creative professionals. And we really got down and talked about the business behind creative professionals. And it's been a great experience. We've got some shows up in that series that I'm really proud of.
Very good. Yeah. I know Joel comes back almost... I've listened to several myself, and Joel comes back every week going, oh, yeah, I heard that on Surviving. Geez, Joel, you really are a fan.
Absolutely. It's one of those things where, like, when Webcomics Weekly went away, there was this giant void in my podcast catcher where I'm just like, well, what do I listen to now? I mean, I could listen to Comics Coast to Coast, but I'm on it, and that seems kind of weird. So I should probably find another webcomic show.
Do you guys listen to your own show?
No,
I do listen for some quality control, but it's usually just running in the background and I'll be like, oh, okay.
I have a hard time listening to myself. I've not listened to a lot of my own shows.
Right. Yeah. And like you, I've been doing this forever. It seems like I've been doing podcasting since 2005. So I've heard my voice once or twice. And at this point, it's so separated. I can't even put two together anymore.
Yeah. I listen to shows where Brian can't make it and then I have to do a record and send it to him for the same idea. Because of the quality thing. Like I want to make sure that I've got the right amount of quality that our listeners are expecting to. Mm-hmm. The thing with hearing my own voice, it's never bothered me. Like even answering machine messages. Yeah. Going back and listen, that doesn't bug me at all. Cause I have, there have been a couple of occasions where I've been too starstruck on this show to remember the conversation. Mm-hmm. And so then I go back and listen later going, oh yeah. Okay. That was a really good interview. I wasn't just chewing on my hat the whole time. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and at the risk of being a total shill, I do want to mention, cause this is a new thing. Those old Webcomics Weekly podcasts, they were hard to find. And there were, the first half was all on one site and the second half of the series was on another. All of those now are over at webcomics.com.
Excellent.
Nice.
Which I just signed up for. for. It was so easy.
Which you just signed up for. In fact, I saw it come across my phone.
Right. Oh, look. Hey, Brian signed up.
Yeah.
All right. It's great. Hey, you know what? Hey, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. Is there anything that you want to tell the listeners to be looking out for? Just something coming up new, anything?
Oh, geez. Well, everything is new right now. Right. So my only thing is what I'll say is that if you think you've read Evil Inc. before and you haven't checked in since January, come over and take a look at what's going on over there. I'm really proud of it, and I'd love to hear what you think about it. I think it's the best work I've done in a long, long time, and I'm thrilled to hear what other people are thinking about it.
Totally. Hey, Twitter, how can we get you to 10K?
That's a really good question. Right. Maybe I'll start posting not safe for work tweets.
Oh yeah, there you go. Okay. So if they do want to follow you, is it just Brad Geiger on?
No, it's just at Geiger.
At Geiger.
And it's spelled like guitar, but with a G instead of a T. Geiger.
Excellent. Brad, thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Thank you. Jeez, this has been fun. This has just flown right by.
Oh yeah. Told you, man. It's like, it's just, an hour is not even hardly long enough.
And, yeah.
But you know, we got to turn it off somewhere. Otherwise the fiance comes out to my office and gives me dirty looks. So we won't talk about that.
Yeah, I understand.
Right. All right. So thank you so much, Brad. And hopefully have you on the show sometime in the future, and we can't wait to talk to you again. And I'm on webcomics.com, and you're going to give us your phone number so we can call you with the manga studio, right? That's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll make you the same deal that Lar made me. I'll pay it forward. You guys want to get a Google Hangout? I will walk you through it start to finish.
You better be careful what you promise.
Anytime.
Joel, thank you so much for being on the show. Joel, where can people follow you?
You can follow me at Joel Duggan on Twitter, joelduggan.com for my design and portfolio, and starcrossedonline.com because there's a new comic and my character Charlie got fired. Oh no.
What did
he do? You ask? I don't know. No one else does either. Go to the comic and find out.
Spoiler. All right. Also, thank you to Matt the Wad for going and getting the procedure done that he won't tell us about. So hopefully he'll let us know later. Follow Matt with the underscores on Twitter. Also follow me at thebriandunaway.com. No, that's not right. There's no .com there. It says at thebriandunaway. That's it. And follow us on Comics C2C on Twitter and go to the website, Comics Coast to Coast. Really, I need to like put this in where it's like pre-recorded because that's just way too much stuff for me to remember. You think after 265 episodes I'd have that down pat? I don't.
Yeah, it's not like it's Comics C2C everywhere. Like it's not like we arranged that about a year ago.
Right. You know,
somebody, I'm not sure who that organized person might have been.
Starting to get a clue.
Right. Why didn't you tell me Comics C2C was also Comics Cover to Cover? And now I'm all confused on my search stuff for Google.
Acronyms, I know, right? It's not like we use those at all on the internet, which is also where our Patreon is Comics C2C. So if people want to support the show, they can head on over there too.
That's a great idea. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week.
Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Better than you, Jill Duggan.